The Car Dealer Podcast is sponsored by SalesLink from Jato, a market insight tool that's purpose-built for franchise car dealers. Get analysis on thousands of new vehicle transactions every month from all the major brands. See model mix and trim data for the brands you sell, as well as competitor data, all in the free web-based platform. It lets you track vehicle option uptake, color preferences, and gives detailed data on pricing and discounts. Sign up for your free SalesLink account today. Visit jato.com/saleslink to start unlocking your market insights.
Welcome back to the Car Dealer Podcast, where we pick our favorite stories of the week and ask an industry guest to choose which were the best. I'm John Ray, and joining me this week is founder and some would say the best host of the podcast, Rebecca Chaplin. Rebecca.
Hello, John. Thank you for that introduction.
Anytime. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm very tired at the moment because I decided to do a thing last night, which I don't like going out of the house in the evenings. And I've just driven back from near your house to my house.
Oh, you could have popped in.
I know. I did. I nearly thought about that. I was like, well, maybe I could just drive to John's and do the podcast there. But no, we are here now. It's been the wrong direction.
Have you had a busy week?
Yeah. So what I was doing last night was this, I don't really know how to describe it, but it's like a women in the car industry kind of group where we get together. And it's only started a few months ago. And they asked me to come along and talk about planning road trips and things. But it was very nice to actually get out and talk to an interesting cross-section of different people who do lots of different things with cars and... Yeah, that was very nice, and had a little jaunt out in the electric car, which makes me equally angry and equally like it more. But yeah, and apart from that, I just can't believe it's Friday already.
I know. Where does the week go? Well, your electric car, to get to me and back, is quite a long way, so I'm guessing you did have to plug it in somewhere.
Yes, I plugged it in on the way back, just at the M40. Cherwell Valley, but not Cherwell Valley this time. I used the EV point, which was, I'd never used one of them before, the whatever they are, Euro Garage's own ones.
Oh yeah, those ones. I feel like, because I haven't been in an EV in a very long time, I'm completely cut off from what is going on. But anyway, before everyone switches off, before we start talking about EVs, shall I introduce our guest?
Yes.
So our guest this week joins us from just north of the border. From James Glen Car Sales, it's Stephen Bogan. Stephen, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. Nervous?
We don't bite, don't worry.
A virtual bite through the screen.
Well, thanks for joining us. So, I mean, just for anyone listening, do you want to tell us a little bit about you, about the business, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, sure. So James Glen Car Sales, established 1982 by my dad, James, and his then business partner, Glen. Glen came out in 85. By that point, my dad and Glen had established a pretty solid reputation, so there wasn't any point in changing the name. And he is still James Glen Car Sales today. So yeah, I've been back in the trade. I had a brief skirmish with the trade when I was about 18. I can't remember if I get sacked or if I left. I think I left for a pay rise and I was told no. So I left after about 6 or 10 months, went and done various other jobs, and then came back 18 years ago, and that's been it since.
I see. Couldn't keep you away.
Well, I ended up in the fencing industry, believe it or not, for 6 years, which was... and it wasn't even like the proper fencing. It was the temporary fencing, which was rather dull, but it was a very, very... competitive industry, which I enjoyed because I got a big order, you know, against, you know, the competition. It was always a good feeling, but I'd kind of seen it out to the end. So, but this is another thing my dad and I'll never ever, we always seem to kind of disagree on. He says that I asked to come back, and I said that he suggested that I come back. By the way, I came back, but I love cars anyway, so it's a great job.
That sounds good. So what kind of stock have you got? I mean, I know the answer to this, but tell our listeners, what sort of things do you specialise in?
Well, you know, we've kind of come up through the ranks, I suppose, from selling. I mean, I remember back to having one car in stock that had alloys and the rest all had wheel trims, and but we're stocking like six cars. And now we've got German stock of 15, mostly German stuff. Don't mind the odd Honda, you know, but it's mostly sports prestige. We have definitely tried to death more run-of-the-mill stuff, and it's not a vanity thing. We've got no issue stocking it. We just can't get money out of it. We take lots of time making sure that the cars are detailed right, branded tyres, good videography, good photography, and see if someone's wanting to buy a 10 grand cash car, they don't care. We've spent all this time making it look like the best in the market, but if someone's got one down the road that's 200 quid cheaper, then that's where they'll go. So yeah, 335s, M235s, Golf R's, M3s, M2s. We did try going above the sort of 45, 50 grand price range for a bit, but the results just weren't there for us. Not for the outlay.
So I did want to ask you, you've got one particular bit of standout stock for me, and that is a 30-year-old Mazda AutoZam AZ1 hay car thing with like folding, what are they, like gullwing doors?
Yeah.
Have a look at this now, aren't
I? I would recommend you do so.
About a pound for every time someone came up randomly in the street on the car park and asked what it was, I could buy another three of them. Yeah, so I got into Kai cars about 4 years ago. A big friend of mine had one, towed it behind his motorhome, and I said, what is that? You know, the guy, you know, Matt, he's like 6'2", and he's standing next to this tiny car. He said, look, jump in it, drive it, see what you think. So anyway, I drove it for about 4 miles, I come back, and I was like, wow. 10,000 RPM, turbocharged, rear-wheel drive. So anyway, I bought a Cappuccino. And that kind of sparked the love of Kai cars. And I thought, well, I quite fancy an AutoZam because that's like the pinnacle.
Yeah.
So after a few beers one night, I put a wanted post on the business Facebook page. Does anybody have one of these for sale? And I found one in Finland. Met the guy. Through my friend Matt, I've ended up with quite a few things through my friend Matt, road trips included. But so anyway, bought this car, met the guy, James, who I'm now good friends with, brought it over to Norway. I drove it to Sweden for the week, and then drove it back from Sweden to Scotland in minus 10 on snow tyres.
Wow.
And this, okay, I guess... I mean, yeah, that is going the extra mile to go and get some stock. I mean, I'm guessing this is a car you like wanted yourself. This is not something you thought.
Course,
I know, this will sell. This will go alongside the 330Ds, won't it?
Oh, it blends in nice. It's on the website for sale, more really to just pacify my wife because she doesn't really like it. I think I'll... Well, put it this way, I've not found any other daft person that's willing to pay for it. I think I'm the only guy in Scotland that's prepared to pay the money for them because they're not cheap, these little things.
No, they're not. I mean, I should say, for anyone listening who doesn't know what that is, basically it's a three-door, it looks like a miniature Ferrari F40, really, doesn't it? But with gullwing doors. But it's the length of like, I don't know how long it is, shorter than a Suzuki Ignis or something. It's a tiny little thing. With 600cc engine behind your head and rear-wheel drive, isn't it? So it's a bit of a strange creation of a thing. So if you want one, you now know where to find one.
Yeah.
If you sell that, I want some commission. So apart from the AutoZam, so where do you get your stock? Are you auction-focused mainly, or are you, you know, buy from local people? What's your strategy?
We were lucky enough to have a very, very long, 22-year-long relationship with Grassics BMW, which was my dad's, that was his baby kind of thing. You know, he kind of nurtured that relationship over the years, and we got an incredible supply of fantastic cars from them. But unfortunately, as we all know, these family-owned franchises, you know, are all beginning to get snapped up and be bought over by the bigger groups, and that's what happened. So we always knew that it was going to happen one day, and the supply would literally vanish overnight, and they were bought over, and we lost our supply overnight. I was out washing a car one day, and I was listening to a We Buy in a Car advert, and I thought, wow. Can you imagine having to buy every car? And I thought, we won't buy any car. But that's anyway, I'm not checking. The domain name was registered. Wasn't registered. But, and I'm quite annoyed at myself because I'd done that about 10 years ago. And I'd done the old .org, the .net, .com, all the rest of it. Forgot to register. We don't buy any car. And then after a couple of years, somebody else registered that, and then they've got their own similar thing down south. But millions of cars to buy. You know, we only need a tiny, tiny percentage of them. But the good thing is the URL makes people smile, makes people, you know, and if you annoy somebody or if you make somebody laugh, you're more memorable. Mm-hmm. So because of that, we're easier to remember. Mm. It's a case of getting this URL and sticking it on the website, but that was far from the case. I had to kind of learn how to do Google AdWords, which was murder. But once you get the landing page, a relevance score and keywords and everything all working, it was phenomenal. But now we don't advertise at all. It's just all referral, word of mouth.
Wow. So how much stuff do you kind of find you being offered then on a monthly basis? So.
It could be about 10 a day.
10 a day?
That's amazing.
but guys, look, don't think, you know, we're just, you know, we price 10 to get 5. You know, you can price 10 a day for 3 days and get none.
Oh, I see.
You know, so it's a long, long game, and you get some rather, you know, unhappy replies back from people, especially what we're finding at the minute. A lot of people have paid peak price and also finance the full amount. And this is the day of reckoning, you know, prices are now back down again, but the finance settlement hasn't followed. So you're trying to buy cars that's maybe worth 15 grand and people 20, and it's like, you know, you're the bad guy because you've given them the bad news. But it's good. It's a great, we're very, very privileged to have our own in-house car buying service, but it took years to get it to work. And it still takes a lot of man hours to make it work, but I'd rather do that than buy auction.
Mm.
Well, James, if you're listening from the sofa, bear that in.
I'm sure he will be.
So how's business for you at the minute? I mean, turbulent times, isn't it? But I mean, how are things for you?
Well, we've just had our sit down, you know, end of year accounts, and it's been a good year. It's been really, I'm pretty sure every car dealer that's listening to this will agree when I say you would sacrifice the peak months for
just consistency.
Rather than knocking out the part 1 month and then having a mediocre month the next, you would rather it just stayed round about the same, which is difficult because you don't sell, you know, you don't buy in 10 dishwashers every month and sell the same brand and the same brand new product every month. Every month, the stock profile, as much as we try to kind of steer it in a direction, the stock profile changes so dramatically. So that's obviously going to have a huge impact in, you know, your turnover and the number of sales and how profitable you are. But good year, and I'm delighted to see that it was very, very consistent, which I'm delighted about. No complaints. But all it comes from loads of graft from myself and everybody here. There's four of us at the garage, and we all work really, really hard at it.
Well, that's good. We like a bit of positivity.
Yeah, absolutely.
And on that note, I will shift us onto our stories, shall I? So Rebecca and I are going to run through our favourite stories of the week, and at the end, Stephen gets to decide which one of us chose the best ones and who is the winner. I've written here that I won last week. I actually can't remember, but I'm going to start. So let's start with Kazoo. So I'm thrilled to report that Kazoo's new operating system, for want of a better word, is now live. So Cazoo have now removed from their website any used cars in their own stock. They presumably don't have any stock of their own. And all that they're doing now is they have turned into a marketplace like your Auto Trader, your Motors, etc., etc. So this is now all live on their website. They proudly boast that they've got 12,448 cars for sale if you go to the Cazoo website now, which is an impressive number considering that they have almost sprung up in a month or so. To have all these classified ads is quite impressive. If you ever flick through, though, you sort of establish how they've managed to do that. So most of them are actually syndicated through from motors.co.uk, or Motors as they now want to be called. So pretty much most of the ones you sift through just have a little Motors logo. And the Cazoo website has a limited amount of information, and then it just takes you through to Motors. So, okay, fair enough. The rest of them seem to come from a dealer group called Carza, which was Carza. I should have Googled this beforehand, but
Set up by the people who used to be directors of Imperial and obviously then went to work for Cazoo and then went and set up on their own.
Yes. So,
yeah, so there's an interesting tie in there.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So as far as we're aware, those are the two companies providing cars to Cazoo at the minute.
Disappointingly, James does advertise on Motors, but his cars haven't made it onto Cazoo, which I thought would be a hilarious result. So I don't know how they decide what goes on and what doesn't. I don't know if they've automatically decided that it wouldn't be a good idea to put James's cars on there, or if it's something you need to opt into as a Motors.
I would love if there was that level of thought going on in the Cazoo boardroom, but I don't think there is.
I don't think there is either.
But... yeah, that is a good point, though. Oh, I'm going to keep scouring it and see when a brown Nissan Note appears on there. So that's the long and the short of this, is that it's happened now. We are Cazoo the marketplace, not Cazoo the used car dealer. As I understand it as well, the Cazoo sites are going or gone, effectively. I think the last one we've got here was in Bristol and is now closed. So here we are, plan B for Cazoo.
I'd find it not sitting very easy with me if our stock appeared on a website, even loosely related to Mr. Alex Chesterman's business.
I mean, your stuff may well be on there. Do you advertise with Motors?
We're on a big bunch of them through eBay Motors Group.
Mm.
Eventually it goes on to Motors.
Yeah.
Car Gurus and we're trialing them all at the minute after we downgraded our Auto Trader package to the Fisher Price bottom package. Freed up a bit of budget, and then we just fired everything on everywhere, and then we're just gauging to see what works. I'll need to go in there and have a look.
Mm.
Yeah.
I mean, if your stuff wasn't on there automatically for free, as it currently is, as in, you're not paying any extra to have it on Cazoo if it is on there, would you sign up with Cazoo as an advertising marketplace? Would you go, oh yeah, okay, I think I'll add that. You know, I don't quite understand at the minute how this is working for them, because Motors...
it's free, isn't it? So...
But yeah, I mean, like, Motors presumably will give them some money for every lead that comes through, because I can say this as a website that has a Motors widget on it. That's, we get a small amount of money if someone clicks through and buys a car from Motors. So I'm assuming it's the same sort of thing as that. And that's a nice bit of incremental revenue if you're a publisher like we are, or Top Gear or wherever else has got this Motors widget. It's not quite enough to sustain Cazoo, you would think, that little sliver of revenue compared to what they would be making if they were to say to dealers, we're going to charge you X amount per month to have your cars on Cazoo. Because so I assume that's what they want to do, but that doesn't seem to
have any stats, are they, about what they actually sell? Which I know, like, Auto Trader and Motors don't have definitive kind of, but you can see that like a lead's been taken, can't you? But
or you I suppose can't, it all depends on how Motors handle that lead and how cars are handled. But I mean, Stephen, would you pay to have your stuff on Cazoo? Is my question.
Absolutely not. but you know what? They can have it for free because there's no such thing as bad exposure. So it's like, you know, a lot of guys used to complain about the fake leads from car gurus. Oh, I want my cars off car gurus. But why? It's free. There's absolutely, you know, so if you need to reply every now and again to perhaps a fake or ghost lead, you know, what does that really take? So if the same thing happens with this kind of last throw of the dice for, you know, for the Cazoo website type thing, then crack on. They can have our stock, fine, to pad out the website, but I'd certainly never pay for it.
I mean, it does demonstrate how difficult it's going to be for them, because if they've had to do it, I mean, I don't see another option for them to do it, like to do it in another way. You would hope that maybe they could have spoken to, you know, what in there they announced this thing, the transition to marketplace. You would hope that in the interim before they launch this, they could go and have conversations with lots of dealer groups in the way that Cinch has had conversations with lots of dealer groups. And I don't think Cinch has got many, but at least they have some relationships, don't they? And do a bit of partnership like that. But that doesn't seem to have happened apart from with one dealer group, which is peculiar. So I think it's a bit of a muted fanfare of a launch person.
Yeah, I think it has been up and running for a couple of weeks now as well, but I've not been paying much attention, but it's not what I imagined it was going to be. I sort of thought it was going to be Cazoo, but with other people's stock. The kind of the USP of Cazoo is you can buy your car online, isn't it? They had all this like pretty good finance stuff you could do online. You can still sell your car through it, can't you? But I imagined it was going to be like, yes, buy this car and we'll arrange the delivery from this dealer to your house and his
Something a bit more unique.
Yeah, but this is just listings, isn't it?
Platform, which is exactly what it is. It's just another advertising classified website, you know, of which there is bucket loads now.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. And I'm with you. I thought it was going to be a bit more advanced than this as well, because I think that's what they sort of touted initially, was they've got all this technology. You know, the technology of a classified platform like this is minimal, isn't it? It's all the stuff they've done around 360 degree things and, as you say, finance applications online and buying the car and having it delivered. That just hasn't transitioned over. So we'll keep an eye on it, but a slightly... start, I would say, to the Cazoo marketplace journey.
Good luck.
Over to
my first story is the news this week that Lithia confirmed that hundreds of job losses were going to be made at Pendragon because they're going to kill off CarStore. I thought was interesting because Bill Berman obviously wanted to get rid of CarStore before and then was convinced that not to change
your name to
rubbish and all this sort of stuff. And now they've bought... I'm just really curious what they're going to make of this business, because you would think it's a well-run, maybe slightly slimmed-down version of what they had, where you've got Stratstone, Evans Horshall and CarStore is quite a good mix of brands. But maybe CarStore and Evans Horshall just clash too much, I don't know, or... But yeah, it just seems strange. And so they paid £397 million to buy it. And they're now going to cut 250 jobs and they're going to close all 16, I think it is. Yeah, all 16 sites set to close for good. Which I think following on from the Peter Vardy news as well, that he's shutting his car stores, Cazoo's shutting their stores. I mean, there's going to be a lot of land up for grabs, isn't there, for people who do want a big car site? But yeah, it just seems
like Cazoo as well.
I think these big places are totally trying to simplify, which, I mean, it's not an overly complicated process, but you know, I think they're trying to almost like devalue what is quite a valuable process, you know, like purchase, i.e., the second dearest thing you're ever going to buy, and then trying to make it feel a bit.
You mean the CarStore brand as being a bit kind of like bit like going to farm foods?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I mean. You know, it's like rather than getting into like a small deli and be looked after by the owner and, you know, feel valued, it's like just getting into, you know, a cash and carry.
It does seem to work for some people, doesn't it? For oh my god, what are they called? Car Giant. But they obviously do it on like, such a massive scale. I don't know if that makes a difference. And I can't think what the other one is I was going to try to think of. But
like Motorpoint or something like that.
Motorpoint. But then I was thinking Motorpoint are sort of trying to devalue themselves still, aren't they, a bit? And I don't know if they are or not, but they're not exactly singing from the hymn sheet. Everything's amazing, are they? But
no.
Yeah, it's all this kind of like friendly, bubbly marketing of buy a car cheap. Maybe that just, you're right, and it doesn't work.
I mean, you make a good point there, Stephen, because like this car supermarket thing has been something that has worked for a very long time. And we kind of say, oh, but it's obviously not working now because of the issues with used car supply and the quality of used cars and so on. Just makes it impossible for them to make a decent margin quickly and still operate in this kind of like, we're cheap and quick and all this sort of stuff.
Yes, I mean, you can be expensive and quick. It's like, there are certain things you don't want cheap. You don't want a cheap haircut. You know, cheap shoes don't last long. So do you want a cheap car? I got a good value car, and that's the thing that we try and express when we're talking to customers about price, because it happens every day. You know, there's a huge difference between price and value. You know, you can get a car that's 10 grand and it's sitting on 4 budget tyres and it's had a quick slithery, you know, a cheap wax over it, and it's had an MOT with some advisories on it. Or you could get a car that's 11 grand and it's got 4 branded tyres, machine polished properly, it's had a service, it's had a proper MOT, no advisories, and it's an extra grand, but you're going to enjoy that car more. You're going to probably need to spend less money on it. And it's, yeah, that's basically, but I view car supermarkets as being cheap, but then you look at your own stuff, and sometimes they are. But they still always look rubbish.
It probably partly comes back to what you were saying at the beginning as well about these people who bought at the high and now they're trying to get out of these deals. And you go somewhere to buy thinking you can buy something cheaper, and you're like, that's what I can get for this much money when I got that last time. And
yeah,
you're already not getting as much, and then you can't buy as much. You've got these big, big sites with, they can't fill with enough cars, full of people running around. Does it all just not add up?
It's probably because I've never been exposed to such a huge operation. 15 to 20 cars is your kind of limit. So my head just explodes when I think enormous aircraft carriers, aircraft hangar style operations with just rows and rows and rows of cars. I mean, how do you manage that and keep your overage stock in check and make sure every customer comes in gets the experience that they need to feel valued when it's in such an enormous scale?
Yeah, you can see how it's harder to make money from that as well, can't you, compared to all the nice, well, I mean, Stratstone is relatively high-end brand, isn't it? Quite juicy margins there, and juicy part exchanges as well, I would imagine. Evans Houshall is a bit more broad, isn't it? You get Ford and Vauxhall and so on. Okay, well, sad news, but
so sarcastically.
Sad news. It was like sad news when I'm going to breeze onto another story. Yeah. But I was going to say news. But interestingly, David Kendrick, quoted in this, says not really surprising news.
We'll be right back. The Car Dealer Podcast is sponsored by SalesLink from Jato, a market insight tool that's purpose built for franchise car dealers. Get analysis on thousands of new vehicle transactions every month from all the major brands. See model mix and trim data for the brands you sell, as well as competitor data, all in the free web-based platform. It lets you track vehicle option uptake, color preferences, and gives detailed data on pricing and discounts. Sign up for your free SalesLink account today. Visit jato.com/saleslink to start unlocking your market insights.
Okay, so let's talk about the government, my second favourite subject, and EVs, my first favorite subject. So cast your minds back to February. It was 3 months ago, 2 months ago. I can't count. The House of Lords did a report, or there was a committee wrote a report about a very lengthy investigative report about what can be done about EVs in terms of incentivizing people to buy them and easing the transition to fully electric. So it's a very, very good report for anyone that likes, you know, House of Lords reports. James spoke to Baroness Parminter, who was, I believe, the chair of the committee that wrote this report, and they came out with a lengthy number of recommendations as to what the government should do in terms of making life a bit easier for people to buy an electric car, which is something that they have to do because they have committed to doing so and phasing out petrol and diesel cars. So the government has now, several months later, got around to replying to this particular report and all of its recommendations. And generally speaking, they have said, nah, don't really fancy that. So the main headline one is plug-in car grants. So the report suggested that we should bring back the plug-in car grant for private buyers because, of course, we haven't had one of those for 2 years, I think, now. And even that was a shadow of its former self, where it was previously about $4,500 off a car. It ended up being $1,500 off, and then it suddenly disappeared. So the report suggested bring that back, and then you'll incentivize private buyers who, as we know, are not really very interested in buying electric cars, new electric cars at the moment. The government says, don't really want to do that. And their argument was that at the end of the last grant, and I quote here, it had less of an effect than the company car tax benefits for EVs, which is very frustrating because, like, yes, we know that. That's because there was more money off through the company car tax thing. I mean, if you talk about £1,500 off the price of a car versus something like potential £200 a month saving on benefit in kind, of course that's not an equal benefit, is it? You're getting far more from the giving far more to the company car buyers there. So on the subject of a used electric car grant, also said no. And their argument, admittedly, which does make some sense, is that the data shows that some used EVs are now similar price to their petrol equivalent, which we do know about. That is true. I mean, it's not that they it's not that I would say that is how things should be, because they're much more expensive new, aren't they? So really what you're talking about is some EVs have enormous depreciation compared to their petrol and diesel counterparts, which is not a particularly healthy place to be.
Just puts more people off buying them.
Well, exactly. Next thing, there's a lot here. Cut VAT on public charging. Nope, don't want to do that either. And the argument being that it imposes additional strain on public finances. So no chance of that then. Totem poles for EV charging at the side of motorways so that people know that there's chargers there and how many are free and how much the electricity is. Nah, I don't want to do that either. And their argument is that there's apps to do that at the minute, which I don't know if they're aware of this, but you can't really use those while you're driving. Shall I go on? I'm going to go on. Help tenants of multiple occupancy houses get an EV charge point. If you live in a block of flats, you can't just say, oh yeah, come and install that on the outside, because you don't own the outside of the house. Nah, not going to help with that either. What else have we got? Oh, yes, this is my favourite one. Hurry up the implementation of contactless payments on charge points, which is an absolute nightmare at the minute. So there is a law that any new, policy, that any new charge point operators have to install a charge point with contactless, but that forgets all of the existing ones currently in place. So the report says, can you hurry that up a bit and re-examine that? Government's not interested in doing that. So what have they said yes to? There's various kind of fluffy things that they've gone. The government has noted this particular suggestion. What they have said is that they will take heed of the need for a more proactive role in communicating a positive vision of the EV transition. I'm not sure what that positive vision will be, given that they're not helping in any of these other ways, but I'm sure they'll find something. And the other thing is they'll remove, well, or they'll look at removing red tape when it comes to planning multi-site charge point operating things, you know, charging hubs, that's the word, and things like that. And I think they said they'll look slightly at the grid, but not really. It's just very wishy-washy, really. So unsurprisingly, the reaction to this has not been too brilliant. There's been a lot of consternation at the fact that the government is just kicking the can down the road and saying, well, we might look at the things that are free, but anything that's going to cost a bit of money, not really bothered by doing that. But I'm going to leave this, the reaction, with Fiat, who have been quite vocal over the last, 6 months, about EV, the situation for EV drivers in the UK and EV buyers. I'm surprised they've been as vocal as they have been, because I think they've only got 2 EVs for sale, haven't they? But anyway, I suppose that is about 1/5 of their range. So Fiat have said that the government is sleepwalking into a crisis, or into an EV crisis is how they call it. So, I mean, Fiat themselves wanted a whole manner, and Stellantis have suggested a whole manner of different things, haven't they? Like cutting VAT on... did they suggest cutting VAT on EVs in general? If I imagine that, there was somebody suggested a grant. I think that might have been Damien Daly of Fiat. And then somebody else suggested some other price incentive, I think. But yeah, unsurprisingly, they're not very happy about this particular nothingy reaction to the report. And if I was on that House of Lords committee, I would be thinking, well, that was an enormous waste of time, wasn't it?
Yes. I sort of think that, I'm losing my voice now. I sort of think they're like forced. Well, I talked to someone the other day who's not in the industry, who told me that this is like fascism, that the government is forcing car makers to make us to sell only electric cars. Like, I can't really think of many other examples where they force manufacturers to make things in a, well, I suppose they do sometimes. But what I enjoy looking at the moment is the new car deals on Auto Trader for electric cars and how massive the discounts are. They're just sort of forcing manufacturers to, or not manufacturers, I'm pretty sure the manufacturers are forcing the dealers who are being forced to slash these by up to £15,000, some even more. I think I saw an e-tron GT that had £19,000 off, but sort of,
yeah, I think we might have talked about one that was something like 28 grand off or something, 28 grand deposit, really? Contribution.
Most of it them seem to be like loyal Stellantis stuff, so I think that's probably why Fiat are not very happy about it. Carlos Tavares came out and said something yesterday as well about it. But yeah, they're just avoiding the fines now, aren't they, by putting massive discounts on to get the cars shifted.
Yeah. I mean, I'm surprised that a 28 grand deposit contribution is worse than a 15 grand fine, but there we are. I don't quite, or even 19 grand. I don't quite understand Audi's logic there, but anyway. But yeah, I mean, my thing on this is, do you know what? I'm going to ask Stephen. Stephen, what do you think?
Well, I'm trying to think how many EVs we've had in stock. 2.
Okay.
Yeah, the Jaguar E-Pace, which was sold on a brokerage, and we actually, well, it came in a way in a reasonable time scale, and we had a BMW i3, which...
Good car.
Do something, it's a good laugh to drive. It will remain the crown in the Auto Trader stats for the one and only car that's had not a view in 7 days. Not one.
Wow.
So that was immediately put on trade, and we blew £3,000 in a month.
Oh my gosh. And you are sort of sandwiched between Glasgow and Edinburgh as well, aren't you? So a bit nearer to Glasgow. So you would think, being near a city, people are a bit more EV open-minded, a bit more EV friendly.
You know, I've spoken to customers that love them, and I spoke to customers that used to love them but don't now. And part of the reason is because of the... He said, if you can charge at home and at work, he said, you're fine. As soon as you need to then go into the kind of public charging network, he said, it's like the Wild West. There's no way you can predict if your journey is going to involve a station that's either full, broken, or working. And just as you mentioned there, there's apps that you can use to check, you know, to see if this charging station is full or not. That's fine, you get there. And it's not full, but it's broke. And so I just, yeah, I think it's something we're going to look back on in 15 years' time, and, you know, and they're all going to be in a landfill, because see, even these things need batteries at, you know, 10, 12, 15 grand. Who's going to pay? Who's really going to pay for that?
I suppose, I mean, my thought on this is the most disappointing thing from this whole report is, as you say, the lack of wanting to do anything really about charge points, public charge points. They don't really seem to be particularly bothered about those. And that, to me, is the thing that's stopping people from buying them.
Is that an appreciation? And they're still, even after all these years of having EVs on the road, it seems to be every year there's another bunch of questions that potential buyers either get the wrong answer or so wide a variety of answers, they're just totally unsure.
Back
to the point, second most expensive purchase ever. And see if they find a grey cloud or too much uncertainty, especially over what the car's going to be worth in a few years' time, decide with their feet and buy a petrol or a diesel car, because they know where, well, they've got a better idea and a better understanding of where the car's going to be price-wise when they're finished. That's even if they can, because I've even heard of people with Taycans that just cannot get rid of them because the network don't want them back. That's, you know, and the thing is, see those owners that have had that experience, you can be sure that that's been the hot topic of conversation for them. Between all their, you know, business colleagues, friends, family and stuff. So that's just going to percolate down and put more and more people off buying these things, because it's at the beginning, it's, you know, you write off all this money against your corporation tax and it's great, it's free cars and you can get a grand car and it's going to be the equivalent of buying one at 50. You know, it's not my thing, I don't know much about it, but it's the old adage, if it's too good to be true, it generally is, and that's what it's proven to be the case with these things.
I mean, this is all a temporary, we'll move on in a minute, but this is all a temporary problem, isn't it? Because I say temporary in the next 2 decades, but, you know, like, we'll look at this in 20 years' time, and everyone will be in an EV, probably, and there will be a few people going around in 20-year-old, 15-year-old petrol cars, but I don't think you're going to see, you know, petrol Ford Cougar or whatever worth exponentially more than an electric equivalent, because I think the technology will have moved on. I think we'll probably have sorted things out a bit by then. But it's just this very awkward transitional period, isn't it?
Where I'm more and more concerned about this, where the EVs aren't quite right. Like, it feels like we should have got to a point where they sort of worked for people, could work for people. And I know I've moaned many times about the SQ8 and how it's a car that, like, doesn't, I can't, I saw, we saw the other day, didn't we, one person actually driving one, but I cannot understand who that car is for. And these cars are going to sit in this weird, like you say, if this takes 2 decades, how many cars is that produced that people just aren't going to want? It's not like a petrol car where you can still use it, it will do fine. Some of these cars are going to be, like, completely unsatisfactory compared to what is available in.
Yeah.
And if we don't know what we're going to do with the batteries or how they're going to recycle these things, like, that's what car manufacturers really need, is, like, what's the plan of how you're going to recycle these at the end?
I think the battery element is probably is quite well thought through for a lot of manufacturers, like Nissan, for example, a very good battery recycling scheme. And I think the first thing they do, rather than try and recycle it, is to use it in other stuff. So they'll take the battery and they'll use it in not necessarily home storage, but they'll use it in grid balancing and all this sort of stuff. I think there's somewhere that's full of containers that are full of Nissan Leaf batteries that are balancing out a hydroelectric dam or something when it's producing too much electricity.
Yeah, they did a football stadium or something as well, didn't they?
There's hotel, the boats in Scotland, funny enough, little commuter boats that are powered by Nissan Leaf batteries. So there is use for all of them. But that's one part of the car,
yeah,
you know, isn't it? And the rest of it is all just going to be wasted. What I would liken it to is a bit like your Apple Watch. So when Apple Watches came out, when was that, 2015, something like that? How long did the battery last? Like 10 hours, something along those lines? You couldn't wear it for a huge amount of time, could you?
You had to charge it every day, didn't you?
Yeah, and I remember looking at it and thinking, oh, what is the point in that? You know, like, imagine having to take your watch off and charge it rather than actually using it. And now we get to a point where, like, you know, you can take it off 15 minutes and it does the rapid charge.
I'm not even on.
everyone here wearing an Apple Watch.
And these will all end up in landfill.
Apple Watches are available from all good retail stores.
Yeah.
Right, time to move on, I think. Rebecca, go. Talk about something else.
Oh, this is just a story that caught my eye, really. I don't know what we're going to say about it, but it's the fact that Renault has revealed this new kind of dealership called the Renault.
Yeah.
RNLT copyright, all in lowercase. Which, so I assume that it is pronounced as a sort of abbreviated Renault. I don't know. But it's very strange. They've opened this new store on a road in Paris that I also can't pronounce.
Boulevard Haussmann.
Oh, well done. I thought it was going to be far more French than that. And it calls it a new point of sale concept, reflecting the different model from traditional showrooms in being modern, compact, and a condensation of the brand. So small and modern is what we're saying here, like the name. Very fashionable, bright colours, offering their new, very stylish electric brands. But I just thought it just caught my eye because I thought the name was so funny. Boy, I don't understand why it needs a copyright on the end as well.
Oh, it's a ridiculous bit of branding, I have to say.
I'm glad you said that, because I was thinking, is there actually a reason behind this?
No, and I just think, like, I think there's some positives about this, but, like, yeah, if you imagine this on a very, like, this is it's not the Oxford Street of Paris by any stretch of the imagination, but it's on, like, a main thoroughfare in Paris with an enormous shopping centre at one end. It's going to get a lot of traffic, and I just think, like, Parisians are not scared of the name Renault. Of all people, Parisians are not scared of things that are called Renault. So why have they had to knock out all of the...
to make it more fashionable and modern and small.
Looks stupid.
So isn't it they're going to open 20 of these, including one in London?
Yes. Yeah. I think it's an interesting idea. I mean, it's what I found interesting about this was that we constantly talk about manufacturers wanting to, number one, sell cars online, which this is the direct opposite of, and number two, operate in this agency manner. And this one doesn't seem to operate in that agency way, because it's not really a showroom. You can't leave with a car from it, unsurprisingly, because it's the size of a shoe shop. So where would they store them all? Where would they actually do anything? So the way that it works is you go in there, as far as I can understand, they talk to you about how lovely the new Renault 5 is, and then they work with a dealer somewhere else in Paris or whatever city it's in to actually sell you the car. So, well, the words, yeah, they say they will work hand in hand with traditional Renault dealerships located on the outskirts of cities. Yeah, I don't quite understand it, but it's another one in this template of shopping centre-y type, not dealerships, showrooms.
Yes,
it just sounds like a pop-up PR.
It probably is a pop-up thing, to be honest with you, because, like, when I've talked about these things before, you know, like, we get press releases like this every couple of months, don't we, to our email addresses, along the lines of, oh, so-and-so opens up a retail store in da-da-da-da-da. And then when I go to talk about it or think, oh, I'm in that particular shopping centre, I find it's gone and it's been replaced with something else. So it always seems to be like a slight flight of fancy. Like the ones in Westfield in London, I couldn't tell you who's in there now. There are car manufacturers in there, but they change.
It must cost a lot of money to do, though. Hire that space.
So, you know what? I think that's still cheaper than...
Yeah, well, probably.
Still cheaper than setting up a new dealership to an extent.
And the footfall that you get from...
And I think also it's where it comes out of marketing budget, probably, doesn't it? So it's that weird company thing of, like, we've got some money here, let's use it there.
It's the agency type thing where you've got the picture of the house in the window. You can't walk in and leave the house, you know. So you've got to see the house, you like it, and then you go and you actually see the house, but you've still got the kind of city centre location, so they can show you all the products, and basically they'll probably have, you know, sample the fabric and trim and things inside. And then if you like it, they can then send you to the product elsewhere. Mm. But you know, as you say, they're getting all the footfall and everything in the kind of condensed population of the city. So it's a good idea, I suppose. But as you say, it's not new and it's been tried loads of times before.
Mm. It's only going to work for some buyers, though, isn't it? Because as you say, you look at it like the estate agent point of view, where you don't expect to leave with a house, obviously. And it is the second biggest purchase after a house, as we always like to say. But on the other hand, if you're walking along a road of, you know, fancy shoe shops and all that sort of stuff, you kind of expect to go in somewhere. And if you want the thing, you leave with it, generally speaking, apart from maybe sofas and furniture and all that sort of stuff. But it just seems a little bit clunky to then go, oh, okay, well, you like this. Okay, well, what I'll do is I'll phone Pierre up in Renault in Versailles, and you can go over there, battle your way through the traffic and go there and get your new Renault 5 handed over from a slightly less decadently designed dealership than this. It's just a bit peculiar to me. Anyway, we'll see if that works. There's 20 more coming. Shall I move us on?
Yes, what have you got?
Well, this sort of tied into the last story we were talking about, one previous, which is Tesla have slashed their prices again. Not in the UK as yet, but doesn't seem to be a particular reason as to why they haven't slashed them in the UK, because they've dropped in the US, across Europe, China, Middle East, Africa, basically everywhere. So the Model Y, Model X, Model S, Model 3, they've all had a bit of a price cut. If you take the Model 3, for example, that was reduced by about £1,500 in China. Germany, again, about £1,500 has come off. USA, $2,000. It's about £1,500, funny enough. So everywhere they've taken the knife to their prices, which is not particularly helpful if you bought one yesterday, is it? But that seems to be Tesla's MO now. Chop the price randomly every few months. And on one hand, I think, great, because EVs do need to get cheaper. And this is just something we're just going to have to get used to, isn't it? Tesla are not alone in doing this. I think Tesla's motives for doing it are that they're not shifting enough cars, probably, compared to their targets, I would guess. And they're trying to save a bit of money, aren't they? They've talks of 10% layoffs globally at Tesla. Mm. It's not a particularly happy place at the moment, as if it's ever a happy place. But this is going to happen, isn't it? As we transition into EVs, and producing EVs gets cheaper and cheaper, and producing petrol and diesel cars gets more and more expensive because we slap on more emissions kits and they all become hybrid or whatever, EVs are going to get cheaper. You just would hope that it would come at, let's say, model revisions rather than just randomly halfway through a year, you know, because that's doing absolutely nothing for its residual values. Well, I say it's doing nothing for it. It's doing bad things for its residual values. And because Tesla is so enormous, as we know, and make up such an enormous portion of EV sales, it's bad for everyone else as well. So bad news for anyone trying to shift EVs at the moment, but not in the UK, where they haven't cut the prices yet.
If a customer buys a Tesla and within a week or two there's a new price, will Tesla honour the price reduction to the people that haven't taken delivery yet?
Not historically, but
they won't, right?
No. I was going to ask this earlier. Do you know if Tesla still do their buyback scheme, like where you get a guaranteed buyback? Because that used to help the residuals, but
it just sounds like a PCP, to be honest. But
I didn't.
Yeah, but they would buy your car back when you came to the end or whatever, rather than the Taycan thing we're talking about, where
I see what you mean. Whether they would go, yes, we will definitely have this back.
That used to be one of their schemes.
Yeah, I remember that, but I always thought that was more to do with when they were desirable, stopping other people from being able to sell them.
I think that's part of it as well.
But that is no longer the case. I don't think they could offer that anymore. I don't think they've got enough land in the whole world on their books to accommodate every single Model 3 that they've ever sold coming back to them. Probably not.
Steve, what do you think? Do customers, are they more enticed to buy something if, like, the headline price is cheaper, like what Tesla have done? Or if you have a higher price, but then it's been cut massively by like 20%, they think they're getting a better deal.
That goes back to like the whole manufacturer support, and you know, it's 70 grand, but you're getting, you know, a dealer contribution of 10. It's all codology. But it obviously works because the marketplace is full of it. And it seems that a lot of people are easily fooled with, you know, with all this smoke and mirrors approach. You know, it's like, you know, what do you think's better? Something at a pound or something at 99p?
Yeah.
You know, it's the same sort of thing. But yeah, to me, if I was looking at something and it was 10 grand off it, and it, you know, it was too to begin with, and they're struggling to sell it. And if they're struggling to sell it, that would make me concerned.
Yeah. That's what I think. But I just wonder whether the way that Tesla do it, where they go, we're bringing the price down, does that all of a sudden, is it worth it for them? Or do they get this influx of people who are like, I'm going to try a Tesla, now it's 10% cheaper?
Okay, excellent. It's been 5 grand out of budget this year. Oh, it's now reduced by 5 grand. I'm going to go and buy one. Especially when a lot of these things are on finance as well. It's not 1,500 grand, for example, is going to make like, you know, 30 quid of a difference on finance. You know, on a thing that's already a fortune, is that going to bring that many more customers for them? I don't know.
I think they do it in the wrong way. As you say, like most manufacturers will go, okay, we need to shift this car. It's at the end of its model life. Chuck a 2 grand deposit contribution in. And I think most buyers walk into that showroom and go, ooh, well, and it's usually there's 2 grand deposit contribution until the 31st of June or whatever. And you go, oh, well, I better do it now. And the dealer can go, well, if you buy now, then you get 2 grand off. But I don't know what happens at the end of June. Tesla don't seem to do that. And they don't seem to shout about their, they don't shout about the price cut. It just happens. So
Tesla are not the only manufacturer on the planet that don't pay for advertising.
Yes. Well, and certainly don't do PR, really.
So they don't advertise.
No, they don't pay for advertising.
You know, it's not surprising that they don't advertise their latest price.
True.
You know, maybe go onto the website and go, oh, it's cheaper than it was yesterday.
But they're not even like, you know, like I'm on a Model 3 page here on their American website, and it's not saying, it's not with the old price crossed out and 1,500 quid removed. It is just, this car is now 38,990.
I think if I was a Tesla buyer, there's only so many times you can do this. And now this is probably like the third time they've cut prices. And I would just be like, well, maybe I'll wait 6 months because maybe they'll cut the price again. That would
just
be my...
You can just imagine Elon Musk sitting on his phone, you know, on the toilet. Yeah, I'm going to take 1,500 quid off everyone. Yeah. No input from anyone else, just like one.
Yeah. It probably is done on an email like that or something, isn't it? It's I'm going to cut this.
It's done great for things to take 1,500 quid off a car. Putting it lightly.
Go on.
Do you have any more stories? Because you've used all mine.
Oh, well, I've used all mine as well. So we're out of stories. Stephen, is there any news this week that you think have neglected to talk about? I mean, I'm at this point open to news from other publications. I mean, Hello Magazine, Grazia, whatever, really.
No, not really.
That's what we like to hear.
That's good. We're doing our jobs correctly. So now you've answered that. Who do you think chose the best stories? Or what was your favourite story that we talked about?
Probably because it made me laugh inside, the kazoo story at the beginning. just really trying their... It's almost like they've got this big fancy website and loads of servers, and they're like, we need to do something with them. I don't know, we'll advertise all the guys who we ripped apart at the beginning of our, you know, journey into the used motor trade. We'll ask them if they want to advertise on our website. And you can almost hear all the car traders laughing. I can't wait till the phone call comes. Hi there, how you doing? It's used to be Kazoo. Would you like to pay us to advertise your car? Hello.
This is the last thing I'm going to say about this, but we did get an email this morning from another car dealer who saw the story sharing a crash damaged Audi Q2 that's for sale.
In that, yeah.
And that's just
all in stock.
It's like you say, the turning around and telling everyone that car dealers are doing it wrong and then advertising literally any stock that they put on there is
Yeah, exactly. I think
maybe not.
his argument was, because they were supposed to be, because they have spent a lot of capital, like doing this trusted sort of, we're not like other, we're completely unique, and we're, you can trust us, as though you can't trust any other car dealer. And then yes, it's all just gone out the window, and they'll just put in whatever ends up on these other advertising platforms.
But also the stats are probably going to be brilliant because all car dealers are on there going, what are they advertising then?
Well, if you're listening, take a look at the Cazoo website and see if your stock is on there, because it probably is. Well, I'm going to take that as a victory.
Well done, John.
Thank you very much. Well, on that high, all that's left for me to say is thank you, Stephen, for coming on today. It's been great to meet you and chat about tiny Japanese cars.
If you're ever in Scotland and you can fit in it, you can take a spin in it if you like.
John will be
Oh,
up later today.
yes.
All 64 horsepower of
I'll fuel up the car now. And thank you as well to Rebecca. And thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode. Make sure to subscribe so you can be notified when that goes live. Rebecca would like me to say, please rate us. It's very important. And tell your friends about how
does
lucky
make a difference.
it really makes a difference. If you want to check out the stories you mentioned, look in the show notes or head to cardealermagazine.co.uk. Thanks for listening and goodbye.